Let's move on to the politics of the situation. Mm-hmm. So much is politicised in the Holy Land and the Middle East, of mm-hmm. course. What are the dangers here with regard to people having political agendas contrary to the Pope's ministry and his desire to go over there and obviously focus on reconciliation, affirmation? What are the dangers here? I've read you talking about some groups that are going to not turn up at receptions as a protest against the Vatican's involvement last month in the UN Human Rights Conference. Also, another group, an Islamic group, won't be paying any attention because of the Pope's Regensburg address back in 2006. There are Israeli agendas, no doubt. I mean, there's quite a lot riding on the back of this, isn't there?
Of course there is. And I don't think anybody, neither you nor me, and certainly not the Vatican or even the local church in Jerusalem, nobody is naive enough to think that the Pope is going to go there on a purely pastoral visit and that nobody is going to look at it through a political lens. Everybody there is going to examine the politics of the visit as much as its spiritual and religious significance. I would go so far as to say the Christ-centered significance of this pilgrimage. A lot of people are going to look at it politically. And yes, in one of the papers I wrote about the visit, I said, and this happened with Pope John Paul II as well, there were people who tried to voice their dissatisfaction or disagreement with this decision or that agenda, and they tried to boycott the visit. But these things even change. People who today say, I'm not going to attend a reception or I'm not going to meet with the Pope, they might actually become so involved with the whole thing that they might change their minds. This is why I was saying that we have to play it by ear a little bit as to how things unfold. However, the fact that this pilgrimage will also have very, very serious significance, political significance to it, is inevitable. And I think that both Israel, on the one hand, and the Palestinians, on the other, are going to do their utmost to show the world how the Pope has come to them and how, therefore, they basically, I don't know how to put this best, how they are right in what they're doing and how the Pope supports them or is their friend, because there's a lot of political dividend from saying, oh, well, the Pope was with us, so the whole Christian world supports us or understands the issues that we grapple with day in, day out. So this is where I think that it's not only a question of how is the Pope going to react to it, but what I've always said, and I said this in 2000 as well, is how the Secretariat of State, how the advisors to the Pope and the Vatican, as well as the advice, the incalculable advice of the local church in Jerusalem, which lives there, which knows the realities in a way that no Vatican official knows, no matter what a wonderful genius they might be, that the local church advises and forewarns what are the pitfalls so that the visit could go in as best a way as possible.
Let's talk about the people of the Holy Land, mm-hmm. the Christians of the Holy mm-hmm. Land, the living stones, as mm-hmm. is often said. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you a fairly broad question. I want to know how they get on with one another. I want to know, not at an institutional level, but at a grassroots level, how Muslims get along with Catholics, Jews, and so on and so forth. Paint a picture for me of the local situation for the people of the Holy Land.
It's a little bit difficult to do that with too much authenticity, James, for the simple reason that it changes all the time. But I'll try and give you an idea of how I see the Holy Land. And I come back again to one of my favorite Christian leaders in the Holy Land, the former Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, Michel Sabah, who used to be the Patriarch in the year 2000 when John Paul II visited the region. And he was, in a sense, one of my advisors, counselors during the years that I worked in the region. He always, always used to talk about the region, about Israel and Palestine together, as a land of two peoples and three faiths. By two peoples, he meant the Palestinians and the Israelis. By three religions or faiths, he meant the Jews, the Christians, and the Muslims. And the whole idea is, how do you manage to get this formula to work together or to hang together well enough without it disintegrating, without it splintering, without it actually causing problems? Now, one thing that we also need to remember, and this is something that a lot of Christians in the West, but more so in the States than in Europe, sometimes miss out on, is that Palestinian Muslims and Palestinian Christians if you notice what I said, Palestinian Muslims and Palestinian Christians. In other words, not only are the Muslims Palestinian, the Christians are also Palestinian. And therefore, there is that ethnic bond between Christians and Muslims, at least in terms of ethnicity, in terms of cultural identity, that is very helpful for them to be able to live together. I come from an Armenian background. My parents are Armenian. My grandparents fled the Armenian genocide during Ottoman Turkey's war during the First World War and then settled in the region. My parents lived there, and I was born there and stayed there for the first few years of my life. The thing that I used to remember most is that I used to live in a neighborhood where there used to be Palestinian Christians and Palestinian Muslims next to each other, just like here. We were neighbors. The only difference is that in the Middle East, each family pokes its nose into the affairs of the other family, so you knew exactly what was happening next door. In this country, you might live for years and years next to a neighbor and you wouldn't even know what that neighbor does. So in that sense, there was a lot of that conviviality, a lot of that common experiences, times shared and cherished and spent together. So there is that common bond, the ethnicity, the Palestinian bond. The difference, obviously, is that some are Muslim and some are Christian. The majority gradually became Muslim and the minority then became the Christian. However, in terms of inter-religious existence, that's how it was from the times that I personally remember. Now, over the years, what has happened is that because of political realities, because of the conflict getting increasingly worse and exacerbated over decades, there have been more tensions. And to me, what I always say, if you want to look at religious radicalization, look at politics and economics. And as the political and economic situation in the area, in that parcel of land, in the Holy Land, as it were, got worse, then there was a sense a little bit of more tensions between Christians and Muslims. That tension is also palpable between Palestinians on the one hand, i.e. Muslims and Christians, and Israeli Jews. And it's not because of the faith factor. It's not because one is a Jew, the other is a Christian, that they have problems. It's because everything in the region breathes politics, speaks politics, does politics. So when you have a conflict pitting one people against the other, it's very difficult for you then to say, well, why don't you sit down and be nice friends and have a nice cup of tea and then discuss this all sensibly. We might be tempted sometimes to do it in corridors outside the region, but it's not as easy as that. So there are some tensions. The tensions sometimes mount up. For instance, if you ask some people in the Bethlehem area, for instance, where the Pope is going, there are sometimes tensions between Christians and Muslims. If you go and ask some Muslims or Christians, they would tell you there are equal tensions between them and Israeli Jewish settlers who've come and taken over some land that doesn't actually belong to them. So where am I going to? I'm going to the fact that it is basically political, and the political then affects the economic, and the economic then affects normal relations between people. So if you remove that, in other words, you remove the major issues, and you remove the issues that are basically dealt with by governments, authorities, politicians, and you go to the basics, people are people. I believe that. We are all born, at least in my opinion, we're all born in the image and likeness of God. We all seem to constantly say that we all believe in one God, although we might define God differently. We all say we have a common forefather, Abraham, even though we might define or see Abraham differently, yet we are human beings with the same number of genes. We look more or less the same, and therefore we can work together. And I'll give you a very simple example. At times when there have been more signs of hope and peace in the region, you would suddenly see ordinary people, Jews, Christians, Muslims, in other words, Palestinians and Israelis, relating to each other in a much more affable, amiable way. When the tensions increase because there is a war on Gaza, or because there is a war in Lebanon, or because settlements are on the increase, or because something happens, there is a bomb, then you see the people, there is a polarization. So it's not basically the inner making of the human being. It's more to do with the external exogenous factors which affect the way people think and therefore divide people. It happens in families. So you can well imagine how it happens in societies.